I'm honored to be allowed another summer sermon. I want to thank you all so much for the opportunity. I was sure last year's 15 minutes of joke sermon would have gotten me banished from the pulpit. You are indeed a tolerant community. When I sat down to write today's talk, Whatever Happened to Till Death Do Us Part, I asked myself, what the heck were you thinking when you chose this topic? For the past couple of months, I've agonized over this subject, with my mind going in 9 million different directions as to what it is I really want to say. Realizing that many marriages don't end at till death do us part, how do I make a point and not offend some of those listening? Please know that it's not my intent to offend anyone. I just want to tell a couple of marriage stories and try to make some kind of point that will cause some positive reflection. Here's a short story about the world's first married couple. Existence was so tranquil and peaceful for the young couple Adam and Eve, until, unfortunately, one day when Adam showed up an hour late for supper. By the time Adam finally came home, Eve was a nervous wreck, and her imagination was working overtime. "Honey, what happened? Why are you home so late?" questioned Eve. "Oh, I'm sorry," responded Adam with a wave of his hand. "I just lost track of the time." Now, Eve didn't have a mother or girlfriend to calm her fears. After all, it was just her and her husband. And despite Adam's convincing act, her overactive imagination could not be calmed. That night, after 2 hours of restlessly turning in her bed, enough was enough. "What in the world are you doing?" hollered Adam, jumping out of bed. "You know darn well what I'm doing," screamed Eve right back. "Now, you better lay down and let me finish counting those ribs." I'd like to thank the UUFSD band for so graciously volunteering to provide a couple of special songs for this service. The wedding song, which they just performed, is very special to me and my wife, Alita. I'm glad it was raining, because I was. A friend of mine, Jerry Perrin, sang it at our wedding as gathering music to set the tone for the ceremony. Now, I realize that the references to a he or him in the music may have lost some of you. So I suggest that we substitute the word it for all the masculine pronouns. Coming from a Christian tradition, this was an easy transition for me. According to Christian scripture, God is love. It is love. I consider myself very fortunate that my parents stayed married until death did them part. They certainly had every right not to do so. Like many homes of the 1950s and 60s, dysfunction, I think, was the norm rather than the exception for marriages and families. When I was 6 years old, my father left for Texas to, quote, look for work. According to my older siblings, he wasn't coming back. Being close to my dad, this was especially devastating to me. After 6 tumultuous months of my mom and 6 siblings surviving together, Dad returned home. A couple of months later, our family left North Dakota and moved to California. The first couple of years after Dad returned were hard for me. I would wake up at night frightened and sneak into my parents' bedroom. Mom, who was exhausted from working and running a household of 9, would tell me to go back to bed. Dad would wake up and tell me to crawl into bed next to him. Lying there between my 2 parents, I can still remember the feeling of warmth and safety being snuggled up to my dad. And today, I never smell Old Spice cologne that I don't remember those nights alongside him. Over the years, I witnessed many times my parents not getting along too well. There was never any real screaming, but the tension could have been cut with a knife. I specifically remember one time when I was probably 13. Mom was pointing out some of Dad's shortcomings, probably justified, when Dad had had enough and stormed out of the house and drove off. With tears in my eyes, I remember getting in my mom's face and screaming, "Why do you drive him away?" It was one of the few times I ever saw. My mom cried. I ran out of the house to search for Dad. I soon found him sitting in his car around the corner. When he saw how upset I was, he took me home and called out Mom to our living room. Dad proceeded to explain that couples have arguments, but it doesn't mean that they don't love each other. The situation ended in a three-way group hug, with me in the middle. I can honestly say that after that situation, I never witnessed a similar blow-up. When my dad was 61, a doctor's appointment found him with colon cancer. Over the next year, he underwent chemotherapy and had a permanent colostomy. When his treatment was done, he knew that the cancer had been pretty advanced, and there was no guarantee as to what may be coming. So at 62, he took early Social Security, and the two of them set out to spend what time they had left together. Their first trip entailed renting a car and driving around Europe for 6 weeks. Dad always wanted to return to Italy, where he had served during the war. And my mom, a lifetime musician, had always wanted to go to Austria and Germany to see where all the great composers had come from. When they returned to the U.S., they hopped into the car and traveled the country for 2 months. The fall of his 63rd year brought about the return of his cancer, spreading throughout his body. It's a terrible thing to witness. When I visited my dad the day before he died, I entered the room to see a 6'2" skeleton, bright yellow and struggling to breathe. As I sat down next to him, the realization that he was about to die reduced me to tears. So I softly took his frail hand and put it in mine. With what little strength he had left, he squeezed my hand and forced a smile. He passed away that night. I was so glad he'd returned from Texas and was part of my life. For the next 25 years, my relationship with Mom grew. And talking with her about her marriage to Dad over the years, it was amazing to me to notice that she would remember the good times only, even though I could remember the bad ones as well. Often she would look at a picture of my dad that she kept on her TV and tell me how much she missed him. I know they were both thankful for each other. Going back to the wedding song, so then what's to be the reason for becoming man and wife or for getting married? Is it love that brings you here or that love that brings you life? And if loving is the answer, then who's the giving for? Do you believe in something that you've never seen before? Ah, there's love. There is love. This is why I'm wearing my Standing on the Side of the Love t-shirt today. I believe that as human beings, we should approach all interactions with one another in love. I think the majority of us enter into marriage because we love someone. I know that's why I married Alita. It's sad that we all lose sight of that sometimes. I met my wife, Alita, in 1981 when I transferred to a large mail processing plant from a smaller post office. We worked the graveyard shift together in a unit of 18 people, working on the same letter sorting machine. She, at the time, was unhappy in a relationship, and I was smitten with this sweet little sexy thing. After a few months of getting to know one another, we took our relationship to the next step. Soon we were living together, enjoying all the benefits of each other's company. After almost 3 years, we decided to be brave and get married. I always tell people that Alita and I lived together for 3 years, and she married me anyway. We had a beautiful big wedding in a Catholic church. One of the highlights of the ceremony for me involved a symbolic candle lighting. Our two mothers went together to a candelabra on the altar, which had three candles, two of which were lit. Each mother grabbed a lit candle, and together they lit the center one, symbolizing the birth of a new family, the Don and Alita Jones family. The ceremony ended with me stomping on a wine glass to a rousing Mazel Tov to honor Alita's family and tradition. We settled into the daily routine of married life, complete with getting used to each other's differences and trying to cope with someone who may think a little different. At the 7-year mark, our relationship had one of many major turning points. Having a new home, a 2-year-old, and Alita pregnant again, and all of my work, I was drinking more and more. One night about 6 o'clock, I called Alita from my regular watering hole where I was drinking with friends and told her I would be home soon. At about 10 o'clock, I got up off the bar stool and went home. When I opened the front door, there stood a fuming Alita. With tears in her eyes, she told me that either I stopped drinking or our marriage was over. I left to ponder all that she said. My first thought was, at last, this marriage stuff is just too hard. But then I started thinking about my children and what were their lives going to be like without me. And what about Alita? Did I really want to be away from her? And what was life going to be like? What was her life going to be like without me? I had to admit to myself that my behavior wasn't fair to anyone, including myself. I knew many times over the years that I should quit drinking. Well, that was 26 years ago, and I don't regret the decision at all. Of course, life goes on, and many other situations arise in a marriage. At least now I can address them with a sober head. There have been many challenges over these past 33 years. I remember one time when our boys were teenagers, life's struggles seemed to be just too much, and divorce came up again. We both aired our grievances, which was followed by a long period of silence. Finally, I looked up at Alita and said, "You know, the reason I married you was so I could have someone to torture for the rest of my life." I got the same look from her that some of you ladies are giving me right now. I told her, no, that wasn't the reason. It just seems like it sometimes. But we'd get through it. And we did. Today, when people ask how long we've been married, we tell them, over 30 years. And it's been the 3 best years of our life. That's not true. One of the feelings I've really struggled with in writing this talk is knowing that some of you are divorced or are going through them now. I don't want you to feel bad because of anything I'm saying. I truly understand that there are situations in life for which there is no easy solution. Some things in life are unpleasant, and we deal with them as best we can. Divorces happen. That matter is for those families involved and not for me or anyone else to judge. As many of you know, I'm a member of the pastoral care team here at the fellowship. It is my honor to confidentially listen to people who need someone to talk to about life's ups and downs. And I'm always just listening, never judging. One of my biggest concerns about marriage is its effect on society in general that these broken family relationships is having. It's been almost 50 years since the concept of no-fault divorce became the law of the land. That's at least 2 generations and 40 to 50% of the population growing to adulthood with a potential sense of loss of their singular family unit. Run-on sentences, it's rain. With this loss and often the estrangement that follows, people have become, out of necessity, more self-seeking and self-satisfying in their relationships with others, because they're not getting it from their families. The willingness to resolve issues has been replaced with an attitude of, if it doesn't work out to my satisfaction, just move on. No harm, no foul. But I feel that there has been a foul, and we've committed that foul on ourselves. When problems have no resolution, stress and tension just continue to increase, affecting both our psyche and health in general. I feel future generations are learning not to address the hard problems. I think most of us can relate to the fact that the best learned lessons in life come from facing up to a tough problem and getting through it. I've talked and listened to many couples who've been together 50, 60, and even 70 years. They'll be the first one to tell you how hard it is compromising through the hard times. They'll also tell you how grateful they are that they were able to endure. Earlier this week, I phoned one of my sisters on the occasion of her 35th wedding anniversary. I was telling her about this talk, and she shared about her own marriage. She said, "It wasn't until this, my third marriage, that I truly embraced the concept of for better or for worse. I finally understand the true value of commitment to my marriage relationship. I also understand that things aren't always 50-50. In fact, there are many times it can be 90-10 in a relationship. All I can do is honor my commitment and work to try to get things back to 50-50. I told her she should have given this talk. When our boys were little, Alita and I took a parenting class given by our church. In a section about teaching our children about the concept of God, it was explained to us that if we were able to get our children to understand that there was someone out there that loved them, no matter who they were or what they did, that there would never be any problem they couldn't face. I think we all need to be this God to our spouses and our loved ones. I'd like to close with an excerpt from a Christian scripture as I think it should pertain to marriage. Love is patient and kind. It is not jealous or conceited or proud. Love is not ill-mannered or selfish or irritable. Love does not keep a record of wrongs. Love is not happy with evil, but happy with the truth. Love perseveres. And in the end, these three things remain. Faith. Faith that we are with a partner or will find a partner who treasures the commitment of a relationship. Hope. Hope that life doesn't provide too many obstacles. To the happiness of our relationship. And of course, love. And the greatest of these is love. Thank you for listening.